Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Or delivery at santiagos@lagrange.com. That's santiagos@lagrange.com. Entercom and radio.com's Chicago To Go program, providing free commercial messaging to local restaurants. Sign up at lovelocalchicago.com.
You're coming home with a trunk full of groceries and it's raining hard. You pull into your driveway, hit the garage door remote, and nothing happens. Now what?
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea.
Hi, it's Tonya Khoury for my family business, Green Tea Services. Right now, we have a garage door maintenance special. Our trained technicians come out and adjust the springs, check the cables, inspect the rollers, tighten hinges, and give your door and opener a complete lubrication. All for just $47.
Service to a
green tea.
Garage doors fail when you least expect it. Don't get stuck in or out of your garage. Call for our $47 garage door maintenance special. Call Green Tea now for details. 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA or greenteaservices.com.
What does it mean to be a good neighbor?
It means being there for each other.
And that's why State Farm is announcing the Good Neighbor Relief Program.
We know that our customers are driving less, which means fewer accidents.
So State Farm's returning $2 billion to auto policyholders for the period ending May 31st.
And we'll continue making real-time decisions to best serve you, our customers.
Because now, more than ever, being a good neighbor means everything. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
CVS Pharmacy delivers. And right now, to meet the needs of the current health situation, we're offering 1 to 2 day delivery for free. Get prescriptions and other everyday essentials like vitamins, allergy relief, snacks, and more from your local CVS. We understand your concern, and this is just one of the ways we can help you to be prepared and stay well. Visit CVS.com or call your local CVS pharmacy to get started. Restrictions apply. Offer valid on orders with a prescription.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago.
The Score!
This hour
the
on
the McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
All right, the Bulls will get a chance to draw first blood. Antoine Walker jumps out on Pippen.
There's one player that is anxious in playing tonight. It's Antoine Walker. Wants to do so well. That's why I think everybody in the Celtic organization likes Antoine Walker. He is competitive.
And Antoine, of course, is... he's a kid, is what he is. Williams saves it out to Fox. Fox trying to leave it. And two for Antoine Walker. This game, of course, on TV in Chicago, where Antoine is from, and he is well aware of that fact. There's no way. The Chicago Bulls roll on. Final score here tonight. Michael Jordan and company 117. Boston 106.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's just one of many times where Antoine Walker and Michael Jordan's paths crossed, played against him when Jordan was with the Bulls, 96-98. That's right when Antoine Walker came into the league. But then, of course, as a Chicago guy, went to Mount Carmel. he was a part of some pretty legendary workouts with Michael Jordan when he was getting ready to make his second comeback. And we're pleased to welcome Antoine Walker to The Score in the McNeilan Parkin Show by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Twan, how you doing today, man? Thanks for the time.
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So there are so many points when you and Michael Jordan's paths crossed, but you're a Chicago guy. What did Michael Jordan mean to you before you ever met Michael Jordan?
Probably just like the typical kid here. Obviously, I was a Bulls fan. Before Michael, I grew up Reggie Theus, Dave Corzine, Orlando Woodridge. You know, those guys were – that's when I was cheering for the Bulls, and then obviously Michael came, and obviously I was blood, sweat, and tears those first three championships cheering for the Bulls, and a huge Bulls fan. And then luckily enough, I had the great fortune to make it to the NBA in 96, and I played against those great teams, you know, 96, 97, 98, played against those great teams. Didn't have a lot of success. I think I got one win. I think I like 12 times. I think he played everybody four times a year. So, but it was great. I mean, Mike, being able to play against, obviously root for to the Bulls and Michael Jordan, and then to play against him was unbelievable for me.
Hard to say you were treated to that era of Bulls basketball in the early 80s before Jordan got here. Some some lean times indeed for those of us old enough to remember, Antoine. It has been said, be careful about meeting your heroes. Once you got acquainted with Michael Jordan, your experience exceed expectations?
Didn't know what. I mean, obviously the 96, 97, 98, you're very respectful. You speak, you may have a little conversation back and forth, but for me, it was in 2001. I got a phone call from Michael, very random, out the blue, and he called me and he was like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about making a comeback. I need you in the gym with me. And at that time, we probably had about, I would say, 20, 30 pros were from Chicago, and I was kind of leading the charge as far as where guys would work out at and play pickup ball. So he must have found out about that, and we brought everything over to him. At the time, it was Hoops Gym on Randolph, and started our process with me, him, and Tim Grover working out, lifting weights, and we had a run every day at 2 o'clock that we played pickup ball, and the run got better and better every day. Once Michael started feeling better, he wanted to invite more guys in from around the league. Obviously, the Bulls players were heavily in attendance. And then you had myself, Michael Finley, Juwan Howard, Quentin Richardson, Corey Maggette, Bobby Simmons, Tim Hardaway. I mean, you had so many guys from Chicago. I mean, it used to be 30 pros in the gym. It'll be times where if you lose the first game, you may not get back on for two games. I mean, that's how competitive these games were and pickup ball was. But for me, it was a surreal moment for me to have Michael call me, and that began our relationship, not just on the court, off the court. I became a part of being around him 4 or 5 days out the week, at homes, social gatherings, you name it. So it was a great moment for me.
Man, that's absolutely incredible, and there are so many different follow-up questions that I have there. But LeBron James involved in this too, like early LeBron? Is this when their paths start to cross?
Yeah, LeBron came up. LeBron was 16. We treated LeBron like a 16-year-old. He had to wait his turn. so he would have to wait 5 or 6 games before he we let him play. I mean, we had 30 pros in the gym. I mean, we knew who he was. We heard about him being the second coming. He's going to be a great player. He could be coming out of high school. We all knew about him, but he had to wait his turn. But LeBron's always been one of those kids that was kind of filthed out already body-wise. I mean, obviously he wasn't what he is right now, but he still was a guy that was, you know, 6'8", 6'9". He wasn't super little, so he could definitely compete and play, but he didn't get an opportunity to play in the meat and the potatoes, I call it, other pickup runs. But he was there.
But he acted like he belonged at 16, huh?
Yeah, he came. I mean, he was the next guy. I mean, so guys, we hung out with him. I went to dinner with him. He stayed about 3-4 days. Came up 1 week and stayed about 3-4 days. We took him to dinner and hung out with him. But guys knew who we were. But, I mean, in that run, it was tough to get in. I mean, you know, you had the Penny Hardaways and the different guys in the gym. It was really hard to get them in those runs.
So we're talking to Antoine Walker here. He was organizing these offseason workouts with all these Chicago pros and Michael Jordan when MJ was trying to make his second comeback ultimately with the Wizards. What is Michael Jordan like at this point? I mean, he's 40 years old. Is he holding his own at the beginning? Is he talking trash? How physical is it? Like, how is he competing against you young NBA stars?
Oh, at a very, very high level. I mean, obviously, the one thing that probably stood out, he wasn't as athletic, obviously, as he was before. But smart, working his way into great shape. The one thing that stood, his dedication. I mean, every day we get up in the morning, we had to lift weights. At this time, I was my fifth year in the league. I mean, I used to play myself into shape. I wasn't big on weights. So we started getting in there with Tim Grover, getting stronger. And then we would go individual instructions on the court, and then we would play. Just to be 39 and the dedication that he took to get back into shape and then to want to play. We played with three referees. Everything was very organized. You know, he wanted it to be just like he was going to have to face. And he went against a lot of fierce competition. And he held his own. And the trash talking that we obviously you guys saw in the documentary, that stuff continued on. That was him 110%. He was really
good. You ever hit
him
with
winning.
The shimmy?
Oh, without question. We got into major wars. We were kind of the guys. He picked his team, I picked my team, and then everybody else kind of trickled in. Tim Grover picked the teams after that, but very competitive. All we talked about every day is about winning. He used to give me so much stuff about not winning the championship, not winning. That was Michael's thing. If you wasn't a winner, he had a little respect for you. He would let you know about it.
Did you yap back at him right away, or did it take a little while for you to develop a comfort level to chirp back?
Probably not right away, but once I got comfortable, and I think it came with more off the court as we started to hang and, you know, go to dinners and, you know, I get invited going out to his house. And once we got more comfortable and I got to know him a lot better, that's when I really knew it. And you know, I understand Michael's not going to, his trash talking a little bit different. He's going to call you out your name a few times. So you got to be able to respond to that. So, and be able to take that type of stuff. But it's all done in competitive nature. So you got to be ready for it. But it took me a while. I would say it took me a good 30 days before I got really into it.
So what's the hierarchy in that game? Like if Jordan and you are picking teams and he has the first pick of all of the talent that's playing in those games with you, like who's the first guy or two off the board?
He's going to pick Charles Oakley first. That's always going to pick Oak. And he's going to pick a really good point guard. So he wants a really good point guard. That was one thing that always stood out. And then he likes to get, like, guys, I would say less aggressive guys. Like he'll take a Bobby Simmons, a guy that's not really looking to score the basketball. So he can, you know, he can work on his game. Now, you know, y'all know Michael likes to get his shots up now.
Yeah. So
he's going to make sure he's working on his game now. So that's how Michael was. Well, Michael always wanted his enforcers. And Charles Oakley was his number one pick all of the time.
Okay, so like Penny Hardaway and Mike Finley are not finding their way onto Jordan's team because they're taking too many shots.
Yeah, Mike Finley's probably playing more with me, and I like to shoot too, but Mike Finley's probably playing more with me, Juwan Howard, those guys on my team.
We're talking to Antoine Walker here, McNeil and Parkins on the score. All right, so those are the pickup games, and then you guys become friends, and you mentioned like you'd go out to his house, like partying, gambling, like what's the scene with Michael Jordan off the court?
Everything. I mean, we thought not necessarily partying. I mean, we had all these married kids, so we're not partying, but we're more hanging out, guys smoking cigars, playing cards. You know, I think that's one thing that Michael probably missed, just from I gather. I mean, he never told me this. You could tell he missed the camaraderie of being around the guys from that 99 to getting to 2001. That's one thing that I felt like he missed. And sometimes it'd be us going right across the parking lot. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but remember the restaurant 160 Blue? We'll just go right across the parking lot, and Michael had ownership stake in that. We would go in the private room and just have dinner, and guys would just chop it up and talk talk trash, talk about the day, talk about the workout. It was like those moments that you can't really, you know, just the real simple moments that was special.
Because
being around Michael.
Antoine, because he became so big, it became hard for him, what we've learned over the years and have reinforced during the documentaries. It became very difficult for him to get the quality time he really wanted, because he wanted to be one of the guys, but it was difficult. And it seemed like, at least my perception of it, is that happiness has been elusive for Michael Jordan. Is that accurate at all?
I think a little bit. I think it is some truth to that. What I think is with Michael is he felt very comfortable. It wasn't security guards. I know he had his security team at the time when he was at the height of his career that he was very close with. But with us, it was just him. I mean, Michael would come by himself and feel very comfortable coming out with the guys, the young guys, and hanging out. And I thought that's what he missed. You could tell he missed those moments of just being normal. I mean, we'll go sit on Tappan on Rush. We'll go sit outside and for 5-6 hours. And I mean, obviously he stops traffic, but he was very comfortable. As far as if he had to sign an autograph or do this or do that, he was very comfortable. And I think that's what he enjoyed the most about being around us. And I think the last 2 years he played, he probably enjoyed that too as well. He didn't have to have the big security team. I think he knew how to handle things. And even though he was this huge star.
Did you guys bet on those pickup games?
Nah, not on the pickup games. It was just so competitive. He wanted to win. I mean, those games were so intense. Just every day, who will have bragging rights every single day? Now, Michael's a good competitor. I'm a competitive. We'll gamble on a lot of things, but that wasn't it. That wasn't not the pickup ball.
So golf, what are you getting?
You know, we play golf all the time. No, we play golf a ton. I wasn't in Michael's league in golf. Michael was 3-4 scratch handicap golfer, so I never was in Michael's group play behind him. But those guys played golf and all that stuff, but I never played golf with them. I played in the same golf course. I may be in two groups behind them, but I was never in the group.
We're talking to Antoine Walker here, McNeil and Parkins on the Score. I felt like they referenced the gambling and the competitiveness, obviously, in the documentary. Mm-hmm. But we hear stories, like we've got people that have come on the show and say, oh, you know, he would say, let's play the back nine for $1 million. Like, I feel like they kind of soft-sold exactly how often and how big the stakes he was comfortable playing with were.
I mean, who knows? I mean, he's a billionaire. I mean, Michael's always had a ton of money. I couldn't tell you what dollar amount they would bet for, if it was on a golf course or whatever. But I mean, Michael's a competitor. He liked to gamble. I mean, that's well documented. And they play golf. They play competitive golf. I mean, and if he's usually in the group with guys that are at an equal or at his level, and very seldom is going to be a guy at equal at his level financially in his group, unless it's another player. But you know, everybody's taste buds are different when it comes to bet. You know, Michael may throw a big number out at you just to scare you a little bit, shake you up.
Yeah.
You know, he could do that just to shake you up a little bit. You know what I mean? He can make a putt, it's tough making a six footer for 10,000. I mean, so it's different, you know, so he's always been that way. So it just depends. I mean, but he's definitely competitive. I mean, he definitely loves the competitive part of anything that he does. I mean, you look at him just pitching quarters with his security in the locker room. That's Michael.
Mm-hmm. That's Antoine, Michael. That's do you remember having an opinion on what you wanted as a native Chicagoan? Do you remember what you wanted the Bulls to do after 97, 98? Were you mad they blew it up, or because you're in the league you didn't care?
In the league, I didn't really take notice to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing that was so fascinating to me about this documentary that I didn't know. And it was kind of weird because the Bulls were not on a youth movement. They wasn't young. It wasn't like they had a young star. I mean, Tony Kukoc was good. Those guys were still very much in their prime. If you actually look at the 99 the Bulls were still better than the New York Knicks. I think the Knicks played in the finals. The Bulls were still better than the Miami Heat. They were one of the top teams in the East. So they could have continued to win. I mean, I was in shock that why would you want to break this up? But it would have cost them a lot of money. I don't know if Jerry Reinsdorf, I know we go at Jerry Krause, but I don't know how much money Jerry Reinsdorf was willing to pay. You got to figure Mike was going to make 33 to 40 million. He's going to have to get pipped and pipped somewhere to 25 to 30. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to get him up there. Phil was going to command at least $10 million or better. So you still had a few free agents that year. I think Ron Harper was free. I don't know if Steve Kerr was. You still had to pay those guys. I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf from Washington was willing to pay the price ticket that it was going to take to keep that group together.
Did you enjoy the documentary?
Oh, it was great for me. I'm a basketball guy. I love all those behind the scenes footage. I loved everything about it. You hate to see it end. I love to see that. I'm glad Michael agreed to finally let some of that stuff out. It was nice to see.
Are you in touch with him to this day, or did you guys fall apart or like grow apart?
Well, once Michaels took ownership of the Hornets, the relationship changed, obviously, different because I was still playing at the time. But no, I haven't talked to Michael. He was in Chicago. It's actually been a while when he was doing that. He got into the grocery case when he was the Dominic's and the whatever it was. We spoke on the phone when he was up here during court, when he was fighting for his likeness or something with one of the grocery stores or something like that. But it's been a while since I talked to Michael. I actually seen him this year at All-Star Weekend in Chicago. I went by his party, and we spoke there. But as far as having extensive dialogue, no, we haven't talked in a while, in a few years.
You know, a texter brought up this memory, too, from those pickup games, and I was wondering if you were there. There was a famous story that young Ron Artest, fouled Jordan and took that cheap shot on him. Were you at that?
Yeah, I was there.
Okay,
yeah, he cracked his ribs. So put him out for a couple weeks. Yeah, I mean, we all know Ron. You know Ron Artest, he's going to play hard. But Michael wanted that. I mean, obviously he didn't want his ribs cracked, but Michael wanted that challenge. Ron Artest was a premier defender in the league, young guy. Michael wanted to see where he was at. So Michael embraced those type of challenges. So he wanted that. And Ron just, you know, Ron being Ron, a little over-aggressive, end up fouling the man too hard a couple times and end up, Michael not, maybe cracked one rib. He was out a couple weeks. It was nothing like long-term, but it, you know, slowed down the process a little bit of him coming back.
Are you optimistic about the Bulls now with the changes they've made administratively?
I think they need to change. The thing with the Bulls is, it's not a huge free agency attraction spot. That bothers me. Obviously, being from Chicago and knowing how great the city is and knowing how great these sports fans are here, so that bothers me. We have to get to a point where it becomes that. If not, you're going to have to do it through the draft. You can't continue to move guys around and trade pieces around. So I do like Zach LaVine. I think you got a guy who could have been an all-star this year. If he would have got voted in, if he would have made it, I don't think people would have been upset. Wendell Carter, they've done really well in the draft. Those guys, you just got to give them time to develop. The problem is you're going to have to find veteran pieces to go along with them to become a playoff team. I don't know if you're going to get a superstar here. These young guys right now, Chicago's not a buzzing place that, you know, the elite players in the league talk about going to. So you're going to have to do it through the draft and hope one of your guys you have on your roster develops to be an all-star. But I don't think the Bulls are far away. They're going to probably have to find the right coach. That may be the one, the ticket there is getting the right coach that can, you know, will these guys together and be really good on player development, because you're going to have to develop from within. So I do like the fact they made a change. I just think, you know, I like John and Gar, but they have been around for a long time, and it was just due for a change. So I think, obviously, they may have to bring in the right coach. It seems like the coach they got in place now is having too many run-ins with the players, and that's something that you don't want to do. You don't want to stop these young guys' development. And some coaches are not good with coaching young players. So you got to find that coach that can get these guys going. I'm not sure who that coach could be, but they need to find probably the coach that can get these guys going. But I like some of the pieces, though. I think they've done a good job in the draft. I thought the trade for Jimmy Butler, I don't think they lost out in that trade because I believe Zach LaVine could be a star in this league.
Tuan, why don't you think Chicago is on the list for marquee NBA players in free agency?
I think a lot of players look at how you handle guys. I don't think they handled the Derrick Rose situation really well. I think, you know, other guys look at that. They don't see the loyalty in it. I mean, we know Derrick had some injuries, had to deal with that, but not staying with him and waiting it out probably was one thing guys look at. And this is a different group of guys. They do a lot of communicating. They talk. And you can see that by the free agencies wanting to play together. And I just don't think it's a good reputation going around the league right now about the Chicago Bulls organization with the superstars in the league. So they're going to have to do it from within. But, you know, like I said, I'm biased. I think it's a great city. I think a lot of players are passing up a unique opportunity to play in this big city where a city where people here really enjoy sports and know what's going on. Could be a special place to play.
Antoine, thank you very much for the time, man. This was great stuff. I could ask you for Jordan stories for hours, but you've been very generous with your time. Thank you very much, and stay safe. We'll talk soon.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Antoine. Good stuff. All appreciate
right. It. That's Antoine Walker, 13 years in the NBA, Mount Carmel High School, legendary player at Kentucky, and Michael Jordan friend when he was ready for that second comeback. Those pickup games.
Parkins, that'll play.
Yeah, it was
that fun. That was a get. There was a lot of good stuff in there. I like it.
That'll play.
Yes, it will indeed. Good old number 8 or 88, but in an 8 to me, Antoine Walker always will be.
Yeah, I like the idea of Michael Jordan with you know, Juwan Howard, Michael Finley, Penny Hardaway, all these like legitimately second-tier first, second, third tier NBA players there. He's like, nah, give me Simmons, give me Oakley, give me a guy who like give me a pass first point guard. Like I want no one else who will shoot.
Yeah.
So I can shoot my way back into NBA shape. That's pretty awesome.
One of the things that I thought of was, regardless of his enormous abilities at a young age, how tough you have to be between the years at 16. In LeBron James's case, to be willing to get on the floor and compete against NBA players. I mean, for a 16-year-old, regardless of how powerful you might be against your peers, that has to be daunting.
Yeah, he was different. Like, that was, I remember seeing him at the EA Sports Roundball Classic at the United Center, and it was just, he's much better than everybody else. I'm like, oh, there's Mustafa Shakur. He's going to Arizona. There's Charlie Villanueva. He's going to UConn.
Yeah.
And he was just bigger, faster, stronger than everybody.
Yeah, he's going to the NBA. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Put him at the Hall of Fame.
At 4 o'clock, Hub Arkish will join the show. Matt Abatacola will celebrate Dan Bernstein's 25th anniversary at The Score at 4:45. But this is journalism, Mac. You found the burnt Michael Jordan poem.
Uh-huh. It was hard to put it back together, man. It was in all these pieces, all really dark brown. Yeah,
it's impressive what you did.
Yeah,
and something. So you found the poem, and you are going to do a dramatic reading of Michael Jordan's poem that was burnt in Phil Jackson's goodbye ceremony after The Last Dance. Exclusively, we have the poem next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Let's score.
I remember there was this team meeting with Phil, and he was like, this is it.
My wife had gotten her master's in social work, and she was part of a group that went in to help people that were grieving. One of the things they did was a ritual in which they kind of put things to rest.
Do you see the way that tree?
He says, you know, this is it. This is the last dance. Last time we're ever going to be together.
Does it?
He asked everybody to bring in anything you want to write about what the team means to you.
Write what being on this team has meant to you during this year, and read it, and we'll burn it in a coffee can.
And every guy had emotional words to say. And I remember Michael actually wrote a poem.
It was a depth of emotion that you never thought he had.
It's about to be emotional up in here.
That's very zenny, isn't it?
Wow. Very zenny. Turn down the lights. Spark it up if you got it. This segment on the score, by the way, brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Tired of being tracked online? DuckDuckGo can help. They help millions of people like you take control of their personal information online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. Hubarkish at 4 o'clock, but Dan McNeil is our investigative journalist on this show.
Yep. I got a copy of Jordan's poem, the title of which is Attitude of Gratitude, and it went like this. Well, here we are, sharing feelings, sitting around the fire. Feels kind of funny because we're grown-ass men, but this is Phil's desire. I've been blessed with great coaches, Dean Smith, Stan Albeck, Doug, and Phil. Phil, you're the best. So I've written this poem about my gratitude to honor your request. Phil, thank you for your wisdom, your patience, all the books you gave me, many of them I read. And thanks for finally saying you're sorry for those BS fouls you called on me that day in practice, that time I punched Steve Kerr in the head. I'm thankful for the triangle offense, the brainchild of Tex Winter. We won 6 championships with it, yet Fat Boy's getting his wish, and now it's time for us to splinter. In the triangle, it's way more fun for everybody because everybody gets to touch the ball. But when there's 2 seconds left on the clock, you know who's taking those shots. I'm going to take them all. I love playing defense the way we did here in Chicago. Coach Johnny Bach, architect of the Doberman D. It's tough to win a 7-game series when you only score 73. Ask Utah. When we saw Johnny's vision of creating offense from defense, our focus became so much sharper. And we had dudes who loved to defend. Scotty, Horace, myself, Rodman, and Ron Harper. I'm grateful for the dream team and, of course, the Isaiah snub, the hazing we gave Tony Kukoc on the floor. But, Tony, to your credit, you got in the weight room, came to the U.S., and asked for more. Barcelona, anywhere in Europe, really, Australia, Germany, Scandinavian countries, everywhere I went, I saw how we'd become so globally huge. I think I love Paris the most, the Eiffel Tower, the patisseries, and the Louvre. I'm thankful for all the big men I played with guys who weren't great athletes but loved the game of basketball and worked their butts off to get stronger and faster and move those big clunky feet. Dave Corzine, Bill Cartwright, Stacey King, Will, Luke, and the well-hung Robert Chief. Scotty, head up, man. You're going to get paid. It just ain't going to be here. You're an amazing basketball player, really. For me, you've been great. But Chicago's going to remember you most for postponing surgery and that selfish 1.8. Dennis, what can I say about you that hasn't already been said? For all those times we covered your ass, you should have sent Carmen Electra to my bed. But I think more than anything, I'm grateful for all the winning, the titles, the money, and never getting involved in the cocaine circus or drinking too much booze. and refraining from taking a political stance when everybody wanted me to because I was smart enough to know Republicans also buy shoes. I'm grateful for all the money for Nike, McDonald's, Bigsby and Carruthers, Chevy, Hanes Underwear. Jesus, as an endorser, I've out-earned collectively those blowhole 85 bears. You guys ate before I got here tonight. Didn't even bring me a plate. Now, is that the way I'd treat you? So I'm ordering delivery just for me. And when it gets here, I'll spit on it. And then I eat the pizza.
I eat the pizza. All by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
Wow.
What a find. What an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan. It pulls at the heartstrings. It really does. Habarkish, at 4 o'clock, your reaction to the poem coming in fast and furious. And no, we're not trying to invent our new low point right now. No. No, I promise. That was not the intent. Mac found the poem. And good job rhyming something with pizza, by the way. That's tricky.
It's not easy.
It's not easy to do. So, Habarkish at 4.
Maybe I should be one of our callers later.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. Mac's going to try to give you guys a chance to do a Michael Jordan impression and get some pizza as well before we're out of here. But you mentioned something with LeBron James as it relates to Michael Jordan. It's not comparing the two of them as basketball players. We can give that to you coming up on The Score.
I can see why this is so popular.
Hub, Caesars Palace released NFL MVP odds. Have you had a chance to take a look at it?
I have not, Danny, no.
Okay. Any takeaways from the Bears' schedule that's just sitting with you all these days later?
Not really.
Yeah! Hub Arkish coming up at 4 o'clock, Mac. Get excited.
It is your weekly opportunity to be condescended to, or maybe that's a strong word for it, to have somebody who is more venerable and more veteran than you be kind of indifferent about your views or what may pique your curiosity.
That's right. Yeah. And even if it's unintentional, it's a running bit. And I got to be honest, there's not a ton of NFL news out there today that I have a bunch of theories on, but I got a few ideas, conversational inroads, if you will, for Habarkish. So we will get to that coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll see how it goes. Any reaction to the poem that you enjoyed or not on the on the text line?
I didn't count the text we got, but I had plenty of time during the break to thank the small group of people who texted to say they enjoyed it and laughed and wanted to know what the creator writer's strain of ganj is, because they want some. I don't even know what the name of it is. But, yeah, thank you. And the rest of you, hey, you know what? Rushing attempts. Sometimes you may not average 4 yards per carry, but if you keep possession of the football, good things might happen. We rested our defense, at least, for 3 minutes.
There you go. You took a swing. You took a swing. I will always applaud taking a swing. LeBron James spoke on the Uninterrupted, his media platform, about meeting Michael Jordan, what he meant to him, The Last Dance, and then it was just kind of a wide-ranging interview that that he did. And he revealed something that is kind of similar to, you know, Jordan loved baseball, was pretty good at baseball, went and tried to play baseball. LeBron almost did the same thing, except with a much more physical sport.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if many people remember this or heard it or if it was a real thing, but lockout year. There was actually rumblings that you might even consider playing a little football. And I don't know if you heard a coach you really respect recently, Coach Doc Rivers, said that he believes you could have been potentially the best football player to ever play the game. Was football ever even a thought for you during that year?
Beyond PR, it actually was. How long the lockout was going to be. And myself and my trainer, Mike Mancias, we really started to actually train to be a football player when it came to like October and November. We started to run, we started to clock our times with the 40s. We started to add a little bit more in our bench presses and things of that nature. We started to add more sledding to our agenda with our workouts. And, you know, Mike kept talking about, you know, it'd be great to go down to Irvine, Texas. You know, it'd be great to go to Irvine, Texas. You know, Mike is, you know, he's from Texas.
Die hard.
Cowboy fans. You know, he's like, it'd be great to go down there to Dallas, you know, and suit it up for the Cowboys. How great that'll be. And, you know, the thoughts came into my mind. But, you know, never having the ability to finish my high school career of playing like my senior year, I have dreams all the time about playing football. And it's like, it's crazy because I actually never run on the field in my dreams. It always gets to the point where I'm either in the locker room or getting dressed or talking about it or seeing the fans. And as soon as I run about to run on the field, something else happens in my dream. It's like something that, yeah, it always happens like that. But yeah, you absolutely right.
I love that what if, Mac. What if LeBron James would have kept playing high school football? How would his football career have turned out? Obviously, he would not have been better than his basketball career, but there are people who believe he would have been a great football player.
I think there's a really good chance of that, certainly, at 6'8"-ish, right? 6'8 and a half?
Yeah.
He's at a bit of a disadvantage in terms of pad level. That would be a challenge, certainly not one that can't be overcome. Without a lifetime of training at it, I don't know if any time in recent years that would have been plausible, but I'd bet on that a lot more than I'd bet on Giannis to ever play single-A baseball after seeing him take a few swings last year.
I mean, that's not even a comparison. Like LeBron, if people don't know, he was awesome high school football player. It's been well documented. His freshman year, 14 years old, got put into a game on varsity in the fourth quarter when his team was
impressive for a freshman at any school. I don't care what size it is.
Yeah, and he got put in the fourth quarter. His team was down 15-0. They ended up losing the game 15-14. He had over 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns in one quarter as a varsity player at 14 years old. He scored 27 touchdowns over the 2 full seasons that he played, was All-State in Ohio his sophomore and junior year, wasn't allowed to play his senior year because he was so good at basketball, but he had scholarship interest from Notre Dame, Ohio State, USC, Florida State. Like he was a legitimate high school football player. So I assume, given how transcendent of an athlete he was, that he could have made the NFL. There was an NFL general manager who told a reporter at Bleacher Report that he would have been the best tight end to ever play the game.
Like, I'm thinking tight end. I'm thinking tight end or pass rusher, probably. A formidable target at tight end, but going up, getting the ball, extending, and then protecting that big body would be the challenge, as it is for any taller receiver, regardless of the position they play. If you're taller, you got to really work that much harder to make yourself small and not get yourself killed. But I'd love to see it. Yeah, I certainly have no question about his explosion or his strength. He's demonstrated both at the highest level for a long time. So I would probably bet on him if he would have gone that route, or if he ever decides to give it a shot. I bet he wouldn't embarrass himself.
Yeah, I do not think he would either. Not even in the slightest. Can we pot Shep up, please? I'm seeing a text from Shep that is just, we need to let Shep out of the cage here,
okay,
and just let him rumble around here. The Shep in the China shop.
How conveniently timed for LeBron to make sure that everyone knows about this, isn't it? It's just, oh, yeah, could have played in the NFL, could have been marquee, whatever position you want, tight end, whatever it might have been in college football. Oh, yeah. See Jordan have a little bit of love get thrown his way for going and actually playing baseball in the minor leagues for the Birmingham Barons. And it just seems very opportunistic to be like, yeah, oh, well, remember, I was a great football player, and I could have been a pro football player and been a great tight end and been Rob Gronkowski instead of Gronk if I went that route. It's
he
just
was
such
asked
a.
About it, though, Shep, I don't. Did he volunteer this initially, or was he just asked about it?
He was asked about it.
You think LeBron does any interview at this point in his career that he doesn't know every question that's coming his way? You saw it with Jordan in 1992.
You think he's jealous from the documentary on things that happened 22 years ago? He needs. At least he waited until it was over. If he were that way, wouldn't he have
Jordan
come out
was jealous of LeBron, and that's the only reason we got The Last Dance.
Well,
that's the whole reason that he gave it the okay to actually put that documentary in, is because LeBron went and he won a championship with Cleveland in historic fashion.
To be fair, LeBron spent a large portion of that interview raving about Michael Jordan, calling him Black Jesus or just Jesus, raving about the first time he met him. He adores Michael Jordan.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
Shep does not adore LeBron James, though.
Shep,
thank God for that.
Shep is a thing.
He is.
He's become a take machine, man.
LeBron is just a guy that always has to have the camera on him, or he has to have the attention going his way. And it's as soon as it starts to trickle away, then, okay, yep, ready for this interview. Make sure you ask me about this, and I'll remind you how great I was. He throws on his Uncle Rico cape. And
don't we want the biggest stars of the sports we watch to make themselves public and answer questions and be accessible?
Yes.
Is he normally,
come
though?
Come on, Shep.
Like, is he normally, though?
I think he is.
Is he?
I think to
normally?
A large degree, right. He's the guy who decided he'd do a TV show called The Decision. I think he's been willing to be front man for the league.
And on your point to that, who did he hire to make sure he interviewed him and gave him all of his brain buster questions?
The weasel.
Jim Gray, do you
Jim
bite your
Gray.
Nails?
Yeah. Right. You being Babe Ruth.
Shep, you're the Babe Ruth of takes sometimes, man. You got who agree with you.
Same number who likes the Jordan poem.
Same number who liked the poem. Maybe they're the same guys. We got a few
probably
guys who just they've been out of work for 8 weeks. They just get stoned and listen to the show all day and text, hey, that was really good, man.
Those are our people.
Yeah,
those are our people. Hub Arkish will join us coming up, and we will see if he subscribes to any of my football theories next on The Score.
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.